list. So welcome back, everyone. I am very, very pleased to bring to you our first presenter, our first teacher for the Monetize Your Gifts Live Masterclass, the amazing Ms. Barbara Winter. Barbara and I actually have a really long history. I was actually thinking about something, Barbara, as I was preparing my notes for this morning. Hold on one second, Barbara. I'm sorry. Barbara, I was thinking about this morning as we were, I was preparing my notes for this morning about how we actually met. You and I met at, in San Francisco about, I was like early 90s, at the Ramada Inn in San Francisco where you were teaching a class on making a living without a job.
Oh my goodness.
And I was thinking about that today, and so as I was getting my notes and stuff prepared, I said, you know, she's the one that's responsible for getting me on this path because I remember. So it's all your fault.
Oh, okay. I'm happy to be blamed.
So it's wonderful. So I want to just first just briefly introduce Barbara, then let her, Barbara, take over and move into our wonderful topic. Barbara J. Winter, again, is the author of the wonderful book, Making a Living Without a Job. She is a pioneering self-employment advocate, writer, and teacher who has spent the last 25 years pondering the question, why aren't we all self-employed? I love that. She helps others discover the joyfully jobless life in a variety in her favorite occupation. She is the creator and the publisher of Winning Ways Newsletter, the longest-running self-employment publication of its kind, where she is an editor and publisher. And again, Making a Living Without a Job is her stellar book, and is Barbara, what printing is it now? Is it 19?
I don't know what the printing is, but we're about to have our 20th anniversary since it first came out.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So Barbara, she is truly one of my greatest inspirations. She's actually one of the first people I actually learned self-employment, wanting to embrace self-employment as a possible option for me. And it took many years after that first workshop that we attended back in the early 90s up until today. So I couldn't think of anyone better to have be with us on the first day of the masterclass, the first session, and talking about something that I know many of us don't even realize is probably having an impact on our life is outsmarting resistance. And a very powerful topic. So, Barbara, welcome. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you for inviting me and letting me talk about one of my favorite subjects.
Oh, my God, that's wonderful, wonderful. So, Barbara, let's move right into it. Resistance. How does resistance show up in our lives as entrepreneurs?
Oh, it shows up in so many ways, and it's so clever that it disguises itself, so we don't even always recognize it. And I have to say, until I read Stephen Pressfield's The War of Art, I was somewhat oblivious about resistance. And what I know now is if we don't recognize it and check when it occurs, it will get the upper hand. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the lines that I love so much is, we're dealing with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. And I think those three words describe resistance too. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. And that sounds kind of scary, but it really isn't once you learn to identify it and stop yourself, stop from letting it take over. So it shows up in a lot of different guises, and probably the one that we're most familiar with, and when we hear resistance, we think of this immediately, and that's procrastination. Knowing that there's something we want to do, but we just don't manage to get going on it, or we keep putting it off and finding reasons not to do it, not make it a priority. Another big one that I encounter all the time with people that I talk to is self-doubt. And that, you know, and our resistance is also aided and abetted by our friends and family and people who kind of amplify those voices and say, oh, are you sure you really should quit your job? Isn't it kind of risky in this economy? You really better hold on to what you got, that sort of thing. Another, and that leads me to another one. What we often think of as being rational and thinking rationally about a decision often is actually resistance, keeping us from making the optimal choice. Another popular way, and I think this is true for, it's certainly true for me sometimes, and I think it's true for a lot of people who are self-employed, is busyness. Busyness, often working on things that make us feel like we're doing something, but what we're doing really isn't contributing to what we most want to accomplish. So we're just too busy to get around to doing the things that scare us. That resistance keeps saying, you better not go there. It's dangerous. Another way it shows up is that, and that's very closely related to busyness, is an urgent chore of a low priority. One of my favorite quotes comes from the writer Jesmyn West, and this is such a great metaphor. And she says, whenever I'm writing a book, I never get out of bed, because if I get out of bed, I always see something that needs dusting. And that's exactly what I'm talking about here with this urgent chore of a low priority. Another way it shows up is simply avoidance, not thinking about it, just paying no attention to that thing that we most want to do. Another huge tool of resistance is perfectionism. And I have always been very grateful that that hasn't been one of the things that I've had to deal with in my own life. But when I've been around people that are perfectionists, I see how debilitating it is. And I spent several months staying with a cousin several years ago. And shortly after I house sat for her and was with her, she became seriously ill. And when she was a perfectionist, and I used to just watch her just kind of spend the whole day in paralysis because she couldn't start anything unless she was absolutely certain of the outcome. And when she eventually died, her nephew found notes to herself all over the house that said, redo will, which she had never, of course, gotten around to doing it because she couldn't do it perfectly. So perfectionism, which I believe is a curable disease, is also something that can keep us stuck. Another thing that we need to know about resistance, there's a wonderful quote from a woman, I think her name was Lady Grantham. I have no idea who she was. I assume some English noblewoman, who said, troubles like babies grow larger with nursing. And resistance is the same way. It grows larger with nursing. So if we coddle our resistance and give in to it, it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And the other thing, just preliminary I want to say about resistance, is it often announces itself. And if we understand that this is the announcement of resistance, we can catch ourselves and not give in to it. And the way it announces itself, and I hear these two little words all the time when I'm in the process of encouraging someone, and those two little words that resistance loves are yes, but. Yes, but. And that is just, that is just like a signal. Resistance is here and ready to swing into action. So that's kind of the ways that it shows up for entrepreneurs and other people as well.
You know, you shared so many, many highlights. I was thinking to myself as you was running down the list, the laundry list, I was thinking, yep, I do that one. Okay, I've done that one. Maybe not that one so much anymore, but yes, I still do this one sometimes. And it's very, you know, the thing that I really want to emphasize that you said here is that it's very subtle. You don't even sometimes realize that you're mm-hmm. in resistance until mm-hmm. you look up and you look at that manuscript that's been sitting in the drawer now 6 months, you know, 2 years, moving on. And let me ask you this, Barbara, while we're on the topic of this, once you recognize that you're doing something, what strategies would you give someone, let's say if you're working on a book that seems now you thought would take 6 months is now moving on, God forbid, 6 years, and it's still not done.
Mm-hmm.
When someone recognizes that they have been resisting, they've caught it, the feelings that come up that they now feel bad about the fact that they've caught it.
And that's another big thing, that we have to not feel guilty about having resistance in the first place, because it's a universal phenomenon. And I personally think that we have, you know, kind of twin forces within us, each of us, and that's the force of resistance and the force of inspiration. And so what we need to do if we're going to take charge of this is, first of all, be really clear about what it is that inspires us and give ourselves a heavy dose of that. And so we have to feed our inspiration. And sometimes our inspiration is fed simply because we sit down and write another paragraph of that long-neglected manuscript. We start some momentum going, even in tiny little steps. But we have to be out. I have been talking about this for the last year or so. I think the absolutely best training for becoming an entrepreneur is to be a private detective. And one of the things that we need to be really good at doing, and I see people just blowing this off all the time, is gathering evidence that we are making progress. And so as we gather and acknowledge that, the voice of resistance gets quieter and quieter and quieter.
That's a really powerful strategy, Barbara. I know you had mentioned that. I think I read, or maybe I heard you say it on stage a while back. And I just love that. It's, you know, you're taking, I feel that it can start to lose its momentum. It can lose its power once you can able to take a step back from it. And I think that private detective strategy is a way to be able to do that, to remove yourself, if you will, mm-hmm. out of the process to see what's going on.
Right. You know, and another thing that's also really powerful, and I was actually going to talk about this later on in the session today, but it fits in right here now. It's also incredibly helpful if we have a friend who understands resistance as we do, and we can call each other on it. And when I have people like that know resistance and know what it's about, and they see me falling into it and they say, could that be resistance? It just snaps me right out of it. I mean, it's actually kind of funny when you realize what you're doing. But if you have somebody that has that clarity about what's happening, but not the same emotional attachment that you have to your own projects, that can be, you know, that's a great gift to give to yourself.
You know, I'm glad you brought this up, because my next question for you was going to be, as the expert in this topic and on entrepreneurship, how does resistance show up for you? And you've already sort of stepped forward into that. Is there anything in particular that you, besides having a good friend, and say someone does, let's go with that for a moment. Say someone doesn't have anyone around them that's real supportive. What can they do?
I have talked about that from the beginning of my Making a Living Without a Job seminars, that it's incredibly important to have some connections with other people who are on a similar path. And, you know, having the intention to find an entrepreneurial friend is the starting point for that. And starting to, you know, get out of your office and connect with some other people. And I, you know, I'm kind of a newcomer like you are in my, you know, have relocated in the last couple of years. And I actually met a woman who is self-employed standing in the line at the post office. And I don't even remember how it all began. Oh, she was carrying a bag and I complimented her on it. And she said, oh, this is terrific. I travel a lot and it's really great for traveling. And I then asked her what she did. And she said she did seminars. And then pretty soon it was time for her to go up to the window and we hadn't gotten done yet. But I got, by the time I got in the line, she came back, gave me her card and said, you know, I think we have a lot in common and we should get in touch. And so it's, you know, kind of having your antenna open to other people who are self-employed, and you don't need 200 of those. I think it's even helpful in participating in social media to start making those kinds of connections. And, you know, I'm out gathering all the time on Facebook. I'm passing things along. People send me messages, ask me questions, you know, interacting even that way. It's not as good as sitting down at the corner bakery and having a nice chat with someone, but it's a starting point. And it's, you know, it's, you've got, that's part of the evidence gathering. You've got to see, ah, there are other people doing things and getting past the obstacles and bringing their vision to life. And so that connection with other people. And, you know, you've got to, I wrote an article several years ago, which is still one of my all-time favorite things, called The Field Guide to Genus Entrepreneurs, which I just made up. And it was about, you know, places where you're going to find these people. And one of the easiest ways to connect with other self-employed people is go to seminars for self-employed people. You know, they've already declared themselves. You don't have to, it's not like speed dating where you have to, you know, figure out where the match is. Everyone in the room has, wherever they are in their journey, is there because they want to get better at what they're doing entrepreneurially. So that's a fantastic starting point.
You know, I agree with that last one, everything you said, but the last one in particular. I recently attended a local workshop, and it was amazing. I mean, it was amazing to be in a room where other people are on the same path. It shifts your energy so much
mm-hmm.
in just a short amount of time, even a day. And some of them are free, some of them are paid, but, you know, whatever the amount is, in my opinion, I think it's more than worth it if you leave the event energized and focused and in a much better place than you were than spending months or years, God forbid, on your own, trying
you
to
know,
struggle and figure it out.
Minnesota Public Radio had this bumper sticker I just loved, which was, get out of your car smarter than you got in. And I feel the same way about seminars. You get out smarter than you got in. And that, you know, and I think when I mention that to people, that there's something about being in a room full of people exploring the same subject, there is another dimension. Everybody gets it. We all know that. But that's where resistance often is really strong and says, oh, you don't have the time to go take that. You don't want to spend the money for that right now. And it's an incredible investment in our future. So it's a, you know, it's a really powerful, powerful tool. You could sit out at, you know, sit down at Starbucks all day and just strike up conversations with strangers and maybe you'd find a kindred spirit. But you up your odds when you put yourself in a room full of people who are already self-declared. When I first started teaching Making a Living Without a Job, which I thought was so radical that, you know, three people would want to know about it, I used to ask people, how many of you came here without telling anyone where you were going? And almost everyone would raise their hands, you know, that people were just kind of thinking, oh, this is really, you know, crazy, and I wouldn't dare tell anyone I know. But, You know, then I would point out to them, look around the room. There are a lot of other people that feel the same way, and they're looking for somebody to connect with on this journey. So to me, that's like the number one place for finding your tribe.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, it's really it's fascinating. Again, our history between the two of us is so long in the respect that when I first heard you speak about it, it was something that was a dream of mine, something that I, you know, figured I would do. And I've always kept something on the side, even as mm-hmm. I was employed full-time. I've always had that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, really, if you told someone, even back in the early 90s, that I'm going to go start my own business, you know, they would look at you, because the first thing they would say is, well, you don't have any money, because the idea being you're going to open up a store or open up a physical building. Someone working from home, work, you know, writing books, traveling, teaching, the things that I saw you doing back then
mm-hmm.
was just really the domain of someone who was like, you know, a John Grisham. I mean, you know, who's this person that's going around doing learning annex classes? Are you really able to make any money from that? And not that that was what everyone wanted to do, but what I picked up from you in that one experience was that here's someone who's doing it. If she can do it, then so can I. And I don't know, I may not have the roadmap, but you lead by example.
Mm-hmm.
So what I find getting out of the house, as you said before, if I find myself getting stuck in my business, I say this to all of my clients as well, is, well, I love social media, I love the computer, but it's made us isolate ourselves so much that we lose out on the thing that we want the most, which is our clients and customers, but the tactile touching someone's hand and speaking to them and
right.
and connecting with them. And I agree, you know, we go, oh, well, you know, why don't I go drive down there? It's like, I can just get on Facebook, you know,
yeah.
And connect. So,
and we have to realize that they have different things to contribute to our journey, and we need them both. You know, we need
yeah.
different kinds of connection.
I love that, and I think Facebook is good for that. I do believe that too. I agree with that. I think it allows us to craft our words and our images in a way and share ideas and stories. And you do find kindred spirits
mm-hmm.
on there. It does serve its place, absolutely, absolutely. Now, Barbara, I wanted to ask this question. You know, so someone has recognized, we talked about this earlier, you know, become a private detective. If they're recognizing that, you know, they're resisting things and they're holding back, what other tips would you give someone who's now really like, okay, I really don't want this to be a prevailing issue in my life? It never really goes away, I don't think. I think it always will stay there no matter how
mm-hmm.
much you grow. But
mm-hmm.
I think your ability to be able to catch it and navigate it becomes much more keener as you're tuned in. What other tips would you give us, Barbara, to help us to navigate that once our antennae is up?
Well, I think understanding how we feed our resistance is really important, and then kind of do the opposite of that. So, for instance, one of the ways that we feed our resistance is refuse to do things badly. So I remember years ago hearing a speaker say, fail on purpose at least once a week. It will take away your fear of failure. And I think that's an incredibly good policy to have, to do something on a regular basis where you know you're not going to be very good at doing it, and do it anyway. And I think that that can be really powerful. I think we also have to understand a lot about ourselves, and this is really a journey into how we operate. And so self-discovery in whatever form that takes for you, if it's reading books, if it's, you know, again, following a particular teacher, a philosophy, a spiritual path, all of those things can be really illuminating and help us have more clarity and kind of monitor our own behavior. And, you know, hanging out with idea killers is another thing that we need to be conscious of, that that we are having connections with people that are encouraging and supportive, and we're doing it back. You know, I think that that's the other thing that sometimes we think, well, I have nobody that supports me. Well, you know, my question is, who are you supporting? How are you supporting other people? There's a reciprocal thing that needs to go on in those kinds of relationships. I think it's also important to think about prioritizing and how do we prioritize. I knew a man who used to have these long lists of things to do, but anything he put on his list, he kind of just would go down the list. And so very often he was spending huge amounts of time doing things of really low priority just because it was staring back at him from his list. And having a real sense of what really is important and what you're really working on now. And years ago, I read a book, and in fact, it's probably one of the few books I've ever read on time management, called How to Get Control of Your Time and Your Life. And one of the things I took away from that book and has been a really terrific tool was he says, when you write out your list of what you want to accomplish, whether it's daily or weekly, then go through the list and assign A, B, or C priority to each of the items on your list. And he says you should always be working on your A priorities. If you manage to finish them, move on to your B's, and you should never probably get to the C's. Well, that may or may not be true. I mean, I would put laundry as a C, unless right. my drawers were empty, and then it moves up the list a ways.
Yes, I agree.
So, I mean, and those things change from day to day, you know, and that's a thing that I think our corporate work environment has taken away from us is the ability to be flexible. And what it gave us was a promise of you will be here and you will be doing this at 9 o'clock, this at 10 o'clock. And so we got into that kind of, and our schools do it too, that routine of being able to predict what we'd be doing at every moment of the day. And as when we are on our own, it's not like that. And it can be very, you know, it's a very flexible sort of arrangement. So I don't know if I answered your question at all or
no,
if I just
did,
went on a rant.
No, you did answer the question. But you did bring up one question for me that I want to ask, but I'm sure some of the people listening to this would want to know. We talked about having supportive people around you and connecting with people who are supportive. So my question to you would be, what if the person that is, quote-unquote, not as supportive of your dreams and of your vision is mm-hmm. someone that you live with?
That happens all the time.
How do
and
you handle them?
I think, first of all, the important thing is that if this is an important relationship and you love them, you give them permission to think what they want. And you ask for that in return. This is important to me. This is a priority to me. And, you know, we cannot put the responsibility and blame on another person. And I always think about what Irma Bombeck said. She said, dreamers are lonely because dreams only have one owner at a time. And I think that's really important to realize that even the people who are close to us cannot see our vision. We could describe it to them, but there's so many other aspects to it, how we feel emotionally when we think about it, how our, you know, how our own enthusiasm level goes up at the very thought that we could make this happen, we could pull it off. And even though we, you know, people can kind of get that, I can't do that with other people's dreams either. I can't feel what they feel because it's unique to them. And so I think, you know, one of the things that I have said for a long, long time that I think is a real shortcoming in our culture is that families don't know how to set goals as a family. And I think if it's just one other person that you're living with, this would be a really good thing to institute and sit down and say, what are our goals as partners and what are our individual goals and how can I support you in yours and here's how you can support me in mine. I think it would be transformational for many, many people and with the people who they live with.
I completely agree. You know, Barbara, you made me think of something as you were speaking because all of your points were excellent. And it made me think of my own path. You know, my path has always been very different than even my siblings, although my siblings are coming around. But I've noticed in my life, as I've, you know, been an adult and out on my own and what have you, is, and it reminds me of, I don't know who said it, but I've seen it in real world time in my life, that when I do what I love to do, when I'm just going for it, people around me start to pick up and shift and start doing things too. We're not even having conversations about what I'm doing necessarily, but I see them. It's the Marianne Williamson poem that she wrote for Nelson Mandela. When I shine my light, when I do my thing, I'm giving permission for others to do the same.
Precisely. And I think that that's one of the things that I've also been very conscious of, that when we are doing that, we become accidental role models. And we don't even know how many people we impact. I mean, it's huge.
It is. It's massively huge. And it's one of the reasons why I felt so compelled to put this whole thing together, because I want to give permission, as I said in the orientation call earlier today, is that all of you individually have stepped into your own and said yes to yourself. You know, you've been just a huge advocate for this topic way before self-employment became fashionable, if you will.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
You know.
And as I say, you know, nobody was more surprised than I to discover how many people secretly had been thinking about this. And so, you know, when I first moved to Minneapolis, I lived in an apartment building. And after I'd been there maybe about 6 months, I was in the office one day. And the property caretaker said to me, you know, you're such a mystery to us. Because, you know, you don't leave at 8 o'clock in the morning like all the other people who live here and come home at 5:30 at night. And you're always smiling. You always seem so happy. And we haven't been able, we thought you were a kept woman. I said, no, that's not exactly the situation. But, you know, they had noticed that there was, you know, that my behavior was really different than most of the people that they saw that were living there. And I always found that, I think about that every so often. Oh, we thought you were a kept woman. And I just, you know, that just tickled me no end. Yeah. But, you know, I write about this a lot about now with my grandchildren. I wrote about it in my book with my daughter when she was in college, calling me up and saying, you've ruined me. You know, and I said, well, you know, I did that on purpose. But I think that we see it, you know, close at hand when we are having that kind of an impact on the people right around us. But it goes farther than that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's so funny. I started to chuckle a little bit when you said your daughter said you ruined me. I said, I think you're responsible for probably ruining the lives of a lot of people.
Lots. And I'm not done yet. I'm going to ruin a lot more. But, you know, but what she really was saying to me, which, you know, I thought was a huge compliment, was I can't just settle. I'm seeing all my classmates settling. I can't do that. And, you know, and it was a dilemma. I mean, it's a dilemma for you when you're 20 years old and see everybody else writing resumes and going on job interviews and you're not part of that and all that. Oh, what's going to become of me? It's a phase.
Now, you know, this is one that I just have to ask you in our, you know, we have about another maybe 10, 15 minutes or so to chat, and I really have to ask this question because I would love to get your opinion about this, as you are the self-employment advocate. you know, when you and I connected so many years ago, again, it was when self-employment, as we know it now, was not necessarily fashionable.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the changes that have happened, especially since 2008 and what have you, and more people who have not been able to replace those jobs and may not be able to replace those jobs or retire from anywhere if they're still employed, because there's who's to say that it even going to be an option for them. More and more people are having to, well, I feel, are embracing self-employment because it's turning out to be probably, how dare I say, the only option. What advice do you have for them with all of this that they are now having to face and deal with now as they move through this path?
Well, the first thing that is really obvious to me is that most people have a lot of untrue information about what self-employment really entails. And it's really interesting. I have this survey that I share in the handouts now for Making a Living Without a Job. It was a fascinating survey that was done by a bank in Canada. And they interviewed 1,350 people who were self-employed and 1,350 people who were not self-employed and asked them both the same set of questions. And what came out of that survey was that people who were not self-employed had a lot of misconceptions about what it really meant to work for yourself. So, you know, somebody who's just starting to contemplate this option, what I would tell them is do your homework. It is, first of all, and I talk about this a lot too, it's so much easier now. It's so much easier to be self-employed than when I started out. And it's so much easier than even the time when you and I met, Rodney, when if it was the early 90s, we weren't playing on the internet. We did not have some of these technological tools. The thought of doing what we're doing right this moment would never have entered our mind, that we could be on a call with people from all over the place and sharing information. As more and more people have become self-employed, more and more of them are sharing their lessons and their journey. And so I tell people in my seminars, my intention is to save you 6 years of trial and error. I'm going to help you through that because you would eventually figure this out yourself if you were patient enough, but let's just get that out of the way. And so coming to realize that there's so much information out there. A few years ago, I was a speaker at eBay Live in Las Vegas, and they had a program at that time for, I think they called them the eBay Educators, for people who wanted to do classes in adult ed in their own community about how to start selling on eBay. And I opened my talk by saying, how many of you became an eBay educator because you were tired of answering the question, well, how do I start selling on eBay? And everybody raised their hand. And this is, you know, kind of what I think, that we have so many blogs, we have so many books now about specific ways of being self-employed written by people who have actually done it just because they got tired of answering that question one at a time. Well, this is how I did it. And so we've got some really good stuff from the field now that did not exist even 20 years ago. And there's more and more of it all the time. And so getting up to speed is so much easier now. And starting a business that is, you know, unique, one of a kind, and custom tailored to the person running it is so much easier now. But we gotta, you know, we gotta do our homework. And you know, I tell people still, when you decide to be self-employed, you're volunteering to be in a minority. It's a growing minority. But you have to understand that if 85% of the population still thinks a career path means getting a job and working for somebody else, you're going to be thinking differently than that. And that, you know, and with that comes some different responsibilities.
I completely agree. And to echo on that and add a little bit onto what you just said is that I personally believe that even if you are currently employed by someone else, to begin to continue to read books like Making Living Without a Job and many of the resources and the presenters that are going to be a part of this event,
mm-hmm.
to begin to adopt an entrepreneurial mentality now.
Yes.
While you're working with someone else.
And thinking entrepreneurially is very different, you know, and I say all the time, it's like learning a new language. You have to keep working and practicing to learn it because it's such a different way of thinking and looking at things. And so it's, you know, it's really giving yourself permission to grow a whole new part of yourself that has been neglected.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, Barbara, you have in our, you know, our last, you know, minutes together, you have a statement that you said to me, as I've shared this with you privately, that if I remember nothing else that you've said, I remember this from the very first time that you and I met at that Learning Annex class, is that the business that you start will not be the one you end up with.
That's right. It's an evolutionary process. And I think that's, again, Rodney, that's an example of how different this is from the traditional career path, because for many people, what work is about is learning how to do something and then just doing it over and over and over again, day in and day out. But it isn't like that when we're self-employed. And so, I think that's also really powerful if you realize, well, this is my starting point and I have no idea exactly where I'm going to end up. I just trust that I'm going to keep getting new ideas and better ideas as I go along. I'm not going to get them by sitting on my couch trying to think them up. I'm going to get them in the midst of doing things. That's a real empowering thought. And you don't have to look very far to see exactly how that's true for other businesses and even individual enterprises, how they change and morph and grow over time. And, you know, get rid of some projects, take on new projects, and so on and so forth. So that's a very important thing to remember. But another thing that I think is very important that I really want to emphasize before our time is up is to the role of inspiration, and that it's very important for us all not only to identify what inspires us, and that's unique for each of us, and then be really committed to feeding that inspiration every day. And, you know, there's that great quote that's thrown around a lot from Zig Ziglar about people say motivation doesn't last. Well, bathing doesn't last either. You have to redo it every day. But I think that's really true with inspiration, that we have to know where the well is for us and go fill ourselves from that well on a regular basis. And I can tell by just my own behavior when I am ignoring that piece of the puzzle. And that's why having, you know, for me, if I have a day where I'm feeling stuck, I grab my copy of The War of Art and I just open it at random and read, you know, a chapter or two, many of which are less than a page long, and that just gets me right back on. I just know where the well is for me.
You know, it's amazing. I mean, our topic is on overcoming resistance, and I think what I'm getting from what you've been sharing with us for this last, you know, 45 minutes or so, is that you have to make a plan for it, knowing that it's going to always be a present part of your life, but make a plan for how to navigate it. And, you know, we've talked about getting out of the house, getting more involved in, you know, meeting people face-to-face and connecting with other like-minded people. Building a success library where you can go back and dip at the well again, keeping yourself, you know, involved and engaged in things like this opportunity here, which we're doing now, is a way. What other tips would you give? So I would say probably, you know, to sort of end our time on our ending time, is any other action steps that you recommend for listeners?
You know, if anybody who is connected with me on Facebook knows that I am like rediscovering Van Gogh. I just can't get enough Van Gogh, and I got quite excited yesterday because I just heard there's a huge exhibit of Van Gogh paintings coming up in Amsterdam later this year. And it's like, Amsterdam, that could be almost a day trip. I could fly to Amsterdam and go to the exhibit, come home the next day. I think I could do that. But there's a wonderful quote from Vincent Van Gogh, and, you know, he as a person was so fascinating too. And I think if anyone exemplifies how inspiration can overcome resistance, it certainly had to be Vincent Van Gogh. But there's this quote, and I think it's as brilliant a thing as I have ever heard about dealing with resistance. He said, if you hear a voice within you say you cannot paint, then by all means paint, and the voice will be silenced.
That's a beautiful way to wrap it up. It sums it up beautifully. I love this. I love this. Well, Barbara, you know, our time together, you know, I could go on and talk to you all day. And, you know, we've had long conversations in the past about this topic because it's just so rich and so involved. And I feel like you really were just absolutely the best person to kick off our event. And I'm just beyond honored that you cleared some time and were able to spend this little time with us. So, again, I thank you so much for being with us today.
You are most welcome. I think this is a wonderful, wonderful project you've got going. So
thank you.
Know that lots of people are going to find riches here.
Thank you so much. Well, Barbara, as being our first presenter for today, I've asked all of our presenters to share a little piece of their wisdom in other ways. And so we've created a page where all the presenters have some type of a little bonus gift. Some of them are discounts off of programs that they offer, but Barbara has graciously given us a link to one of her best articles on 29 Things to Love About Being Joyfully Jobless. Don't you just love that title? I love that title. So you can access those bonuses, and that page is being updated literally pretty much on the hour. There's new things still coming through. But right now that is getpaidforyourcreativity.com/gifts, G-I-F-T-S, real simple. And you will see Barbara's wonderful link to her wonderful blog article as well as the other presenters, and again, more being added as we go through the day. So with that said, I will be sending out information later on this evening when the recording is available. Again, that will be available for purchase for $20 individually, or you can purchase a Muse package, which includes all 15 presenters for $94, and information will be going out about that also this evening, along with summary sheets. So, Barbara, any last closing words for us before we end our session?
No.
Okay. You said it all. Wonderful. I love it. I love it. Well, Barbara, again, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon, and we will see you on the road, I'm sure, at some point, at some event, some journey along the way. So, again,
I would
thank
love
you
it.
For being with us today. And
thanks
with that
for
said,
having me.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. My pleasure. I'm honored. And also, I'll just give this one little tidbit out to everyone listening, is that if you have not picked up a copy of Barbara's book, Making Living Without a Job, I highly suggest adding that to your success library as well. I have had to purchase 3 copies of it because I lost or destroyed the first 2. So, but it's one. So I highly recommend picking up that book. I believe you can find it through Amazon.com, correct, Barbara?
Yes, you can. I had an email the other day, or a message, I guess, on Facebook from someone who said she just gave her copy away and was going to replace it, and she'd given away 20 copies of it. I was like, keep it up. You
keep
can keep doing that. That's fine. Yeah.
Keep it up.
Yeah.
Well, wonderful. Well, thank you all, everyone, and we will be meeting back in about 10 minutes with Ariana Lisa Newcomer. We're going to be talking about reclaiming your authentic voice. So we will see you at 1 o'clock. Thank you so much. Thank you again, Barbara, and everyone have a wonderful afternoon.
Bye-bye.
We'll be gone. Bye-bye.
The moderator has left the conversation.